Today, I have a 7-year-old, I have a 2-year-old, and an 8-month-old.
Matamoros Villalpando, can you talk about the fact that this is a for-profit prison and what difference you think this makes? They're being sued under slavery, anti-slavery laws in Aurora, in a jail there. What about in Tacoma?
Yeah, we know this is one of the largest detention centers in the West Coast and the nation. They make a lot of money out of engaging our families in there, $165, I believe, per day per person. And the jobs that people are getting paid to do inside for a dollar a day is not everything that they do inside. We have reports that people are asked to paint the walls or wax the floors in exchange for having a piece of chicken or a piece of candy. And sometimes not even that. They're just promised that and that doesn't happen. We also have seen a lot of reports that the food is always bad, but sometimes it's not only that, it's the fact that the portions are getting smaller. And when people complain about that, geo guards say, well, there's just too many of you. What do you want us to do?
We have to leave it there, but we're going to continue the conversation after the show and post it at democracynow.org. We're speaking with Matamoros Villalpando with Northwest Detention Center Resistance and the group Mijente, and Alexis Erickson, whose partner is hunger striker Christian Lopez. As a result, he was sent to a New Mexico jail from Tacoma. That does it for our broadcast. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. Hope you're doing well out there today. It's a little chilly, but definitely it's springtime in Michigan. I remember a lot of, because tomorrow is Earth Day, first of all, and so I remember a lot of times we had some sort of Earth Day festival here on the Henry Ford campus outside. And it was always freezing cold, even colder than this. So I guess we're a little lucky. It seems to be a little warmer. Global warming is hitting. But it's still kind of cold, and that's too bad. But I hope you're having a good week, and we are have a special guest in honor, I guess in honor, and in observance of Earth Day for this year, which is tomorrow, Saturday, the 22nd of April. It's always the 22nd of April. We have Dave Norwood with us, and Dave is the Sustainability Coordinator at the City of Dearborn. And let me see if your microphone is turned on. Yes, say hello.
Great.
Dave.
Hi. Thanks, Jay.
Yes, there you are. Okay. We talk to you I like to do it every year. I think we missed last year for some reason. But there's always a lot of things going on. Just to be clear, you're a full-time employee at the City of Dearborn.
That is correct.
But, and no disrespect here, you don't really have a budget of your own.
No, I do not.
Right. So, boy, that's really something. He's got a whole department there of one and no budget. But in fact, the title of your job is what the whole idea was at the beginning, a coordinator.
Correct.
So you're working with the other areas of the city and the community and other organizations to make our life more sustainable, which means perhaps, well, hopefully in the long run, a longer life, but in a cleaner environment. And there's many aspects to that, but also specifically for the city, they want to be able to save money, of course, too. And they don't want to necessarily pollute anything if they don't have to. It'd be a bad example of city government, certainly. So how are things going on all these fronts here? You have a few things that are coming up that we want to mention, ongoing initiatives that are just beginning, and those are very exciting. But let's start with, since we last talked to you or so on, how do you feel? Are things, is there more awareness among the groups and the city departments that sustainability is really essential?
Yes, there's definitely some more awareness, and built into some of the things that the city's doing in sustainability, certainly in planning, certainly in our public works department when we're working on our CSO projects.
Combined sewer overflow.
Thank you. Yes. We also have, there's a gentleman in the public works department who's very, very, very supportive of the things I do. He's helping me with some of the solar projects that we want to do in the city. Mm-hmm. Also in transportation issues where we're taking on new biking efforts throughout the town, how to connect the whole city off of the Rouge Gateway Trail that everybody's, mm-hmm. most people are pretty familiar with. We're building off of that to connect the rest of the city.
We'll talk to you more about that, certainly, yeah.
And one of my favorites is certainly the Rouge River and the paddling opportunities that are coming out now that the Rouge is getting cleaned up.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Nobody wants to paddle on a dirty river. I mean, if they happen to fall in or something. Now, it's never been dangerous for swimming, has it?
Well, it's in the past.
Not recommended.
Not recommended. Not to have contact in the past.
I think that's kind of like the Detroit River. It's not recommended for swimming.
Yeah, full body contact. You can. It's okay now. Where the major issues in the river now are mostly industrial section in the Lower Rouge, where the sediments are a problem. But now we're seeing some interesting wildlife. There's some mink, beaver. Last year, I saw a 30-inch northern pike at Ford Field in the pond there. So life is coming back to the river.
Because you mentioned one of the initiatives always is trying to get alternative energy sources that are less expensive and less polluting for the cities. And there was a study that came out, and I don't know if I have the group here, but I think I found it through Sierra Club website. It's called Shining Cities 2017, and they're listing the top 20 solar cities by total installed solar PV capacity. PV
photovoltaic.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Turns light into electricity.
Correct.
There you go. And by the end of 2016, I have that list. But also, there's another interesting table called the Solar Beginners table, which is cities with less than 5 watts of solar PV per person end of 2016. And in that list, Detroit is in there. Oh my gosh, Detroit, Michigan. Total solar PV installed in, I guess it's MW is megawatts?
Correct.
Not milliwatts, probably.
No.
Okay, megawatts. And but one megawatt. And, of course, it's a very big city, so I don't know where they have that installed, of course. But their total solar PV rank in terms of all cities is 56, whereas the best city in the U.S., San Diego, of course, that's southernmost California, and they do get a lot of sun, they have 303 megawatts of total solar PV installed, and their rank, therefore, is number one in the U.S., The only thing close to that's doing really well, it's in the Midwest, is Indianapolis, Indiana. They have 127, and they're ranked 6th in the whole U.S., Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. So, but I think you've known before and have mentioned, too, is that there's no reason why we can't do a lot more solar and maybe some other kinds of energy sources in Michigan, since the at least solar technology is getting, well, I think all of the alternative technologies are getting more efficient.
It's improving, yes.
And lowering costs, mm-hmm. lowering in cost. But I wonder, Indianapolis and these other cities, they must have had either a great head start or they had a lot of investment from a number of big businesses who were able to afford that.
It could be private investment. Also could be some state policies and how it's set up, how solar, the energy produced by solar, how it gets back into the grid and how that transmission and how that exchange happens between the utility.
But Detroit is 56. Best in the U.S. And it's only got that 1 megawatt of PV installed. Have you heard anything about where they're doing that or what? I mean, Detroit we always think of as, you know, a bad fiscal situation for many years. And
I'm not sure where that
a megawatt,
at.
You know, seems like a lot for Detroit.
Yeah, that's a good megawatt is a lot of electricity.
Because we beat out Louisville and Oklahoma, who are also beginners, and, well, in Anchorage, Alaska, it's amazing they have any sunlight at all. But maybe the sun stays in the sky longer, you know, in
certainly
winter.
Certainly in the summertime, yeah.
Yeah, in summertime, because more hours of daylight mm-hmm. or something. More than Virginia Beach, more than Birmingham, Alabama. And Birmingham would have a lot of sun, but they, I don't know how much money they put into this. But I'm just saying we're doing better than a lot of cities that, you know, Omaha might even have more population than Detroit these days. I don't know, but I'm just...
It's close, yeah.
So I'm just saying that I'd love to find out how, maybe you would too now, find out how Detroit got a megawatt installed somewhere. They don't have any comparable city on this list. I just see the top 20 or so. Mm-hmm. And I'll let you have this so you can research it later if you want
to.
But
I would like to look at it.
But, you know, Chicago is considered a beginner, but they have 13 megawatts. They are 26, but they're just a beginner because they have less than 5 watts of solar PV per person. And that's, I guess, a good criteria, not just the although Detroit has an awful lot of open land. I mean, if you wanted to do solar farms or something, although they're thinking maybe planting food too.
There's urban agriculture. Is,
you know, that's always
growing
good.
In Detroit. Yes.
Yeah, that's always good too if it's well maintained. So, so we just really have some solar wear in terms of city buildings. I think we had some solar on the parking decks at the old City Hall.
Correct. Yep.
What about the new City Hall?
So the new City Hall, we're looking at putting a solar awning on the south side of the building that faces the railroad tracks. Mm-hmm. We benchmarked a project down in Brownstown Township where when DT had the solar currents project program where they were allowing, they were supplementing up to 50% of the cost of solar panels. They put a project there, and we went and looked at that, and that seemed to make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Not only would it provide electricity, but also works on solar heat gain in the summertime. So the angle of the panels stop the sun from heating up the interior space. And in the wintertime, the sun is low enough, it lets the sun get in.
And at lunchtime, the employees of the DAC can go out there and have a little picnic with the awning protecting them. Or is it going to be functional or just not?
No, it probably won't be that big.
It won't be
enough,
like a picnic awning. No, darn. Oh, well.
No, there is a project in place to do some carports, but we're trying to figure out how the financials work on that.
That's the big Ford Motor Company project. Supposedly, they're converting a lot of their... Not a lot. Just a significant number, apparently, of their parking lots are going to have solar panel arrays over them.
Correct.
Which will shield the cars a little bit from maybe sun or rain. But they apparently feel that the investment is worthwhile that way.
They've done it behind the world headquarters.
Already.
And they tapped into electric car chargers are underneath the panels.
How's that going for us? I mean, electric car sales are happening, but not so much in Michigan. The Chevy Bolt won't even be available in Michigan until the fall. And Tesla is not allowed to sell cars here, although that's out of the price range of most average people. Mm-hmm. I did have a deposit down on a Tesla 3. I was one of the first 100,000. Yes, I wanted to support the cause. And then I needed the money, you know, retired people, limited income, and I had to pull back. But sure. I have solar, I have stock in Tesla also, and oh my God, it's really gone up. I mean, I was almost going to sell it because it wasn't doing too well, but they just have a buzz right now for a few weeks anyway.
We have cars.
So what about charging ports in the city?
Several.
In the... parking towers in West Dearborn, they still have
There's one there.
One.
There's one in the east deck. I'm sorry, the west deck.
I mean, just one car at a time, right?
One car at a time. And then we have four charging stations at the train station. Mm-hmm. And then we have one behind the library.
I heard about the library is a new one.
And we have six stations in the parking deck in East Dearborn, across the street from Old City Hall.
I don't see those advertised too much. I assume in those lots or facilities, they've got a little sign up or something.
Correct, but, yes.
And instructions for use. One of the problems with car charging, electrical car charging, is there's different standards for plugs.
Well, nice to hear. The only different one is Tesla. The Ford and Leaf,
Nissan
and
Leaf,
the Prius, they all have the same. They standardize that plug.
Oh, well, that's good.
J1714, I forget the number.
Okay, and that's what we have in the city?
Correct, okay. Yes.
So still anti-Tesla out there. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Maybe you can get adapters or something.
Sure.
Or a long extension cord. How do you think those are being used? Can you track those at all?
We We do some tracking, mm-hmm. But when we put them in, we just put them in for public use. Mm-hmm. We didn't mm-hmm. put any more
there's
technology
not a,
on them.
There's not a meter or anything.
No, nothing like that. Because okay. We calculated the cost of what it take to fully charge a volt that was completely drained, and it was about 80 cents. Mm. So at the time, we felt it's not worth the...
No, you could easily, just for the sake of promotion, you could easily support that. You know,
correct, yes, yes.
If it was hundreds of cars every day, if you had that many chargers, then that would be
it's
quite
a story,
cost.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Because I think Tesla is moving to... On their supercharger system, they're moving to a pay plan mm-hmm. for new buyers, or at least new buyers soon. Something, I think they said that the people that already have a Tesla would be grandfathered or whatever, so to speak.
No?
They
okay.
wouldn't have to pay at this point anyway to use the superchargers, mm-hmm. which are on various expressways and around the country and in Michigan too. I think there's one in Ann Arbor, at least one in Detroit, but you already have to have the car. So, okay, well, that's the solar story. Are we doing any other alternative energy in the city? Mayor Guido, of course, years ago, he wanted to do wind turbines down,
yes.
down by the river somewhere.
Yeah, there's been, we did some studies on wind. The city was approached by former owners of the Village Plaza at Otter Drive, Michigan Avenue,
oh, yeah.
about
mm-hmm.
putting about 190 feet tall wind towers on the four corners of that building.
Wow.
The city was not too supportive of that for various reasons, but it was told us at that time that it had to be that high to actually get wind. Mm. And then, yes, you're correct, the mayor and Mayor O'Reilly was looking at, can we put some type of wind turbines along the Rouge River? And so we did some studies on wind, and there's a local resident who's very interested in this, and she helped us out, and we weren't able to produce enough. You need about 7 miles an hour on average wind. And we're not getting that point at this point. Technology will change,
mm-hmm.
Bob. Well,
some for the better, yes.
It'll get for better. And I know that there's some that I've looked at only need a half mile an hour wind to work.
Yeah, I know some people, certainly up north, and I don't quite understand with all the space in the upper part of the Lower Peninsula even, why they're concerned about the height and the look of these big towers. I mean, windmills where the Netherlands
Europe,
or something. Mm-hmm. Of course, they were for a different purpose, but I mean, they were part of the landscape forever. If you drive towards Toronto from Windsor, depending on which road, the main expressway, oh my gosh, you'll see these huge towers. But all it is just farming land anyway. I mean, it's I can't call it unsightly, and I really don't believe some of the people say, oh, we're killing lots of birds. Well, they're moving pretty slowly, so I think it's got to be a pretty slow or dumb bird that's going to get caught in that. And even in big windstorms, I don't think they go all that much faster.
No, they govern them down.
They have
yeah,
to.
They govern them down, yes.
Otherwise, they'd fly off the rack
correct,
and
right.
travel across and destroy somebody's barn or something or house. So I just don't understand some of those problems. And you don't have to go into it. I'm just saying there's many things I don't understand. But I don't – now, I do understand in the middle of a shopping district in West Dearborn, all of a sudden to have a 190-foot-tall tower, whether it's got a windmill on top, propeller blades or not, that would sort of change the landscape look, mm-hmm. Whatever that means. And mm-hmm. at a certain point in our evolution or devolution as a society, we're going to say, because that's saving us money or it's giving us clean energy, that's good. Doesn't matter if it's a little taller than other buildings. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not quite there yet. We haven't evolved or devolved, whatever, to a point where that's important. Mm-hmm. And we're really not trying. I mean, those are the only two real good approaches for alternative energy in this area that maybe the city could be involved in.
Well, there's, you could say.
We're not going to put a dam on the Huron River. So.
No, on the Rouge.
On the Rouge.
Yeah,
I mean,
no, we're not going to do it. No,
yeah.
I don't see that happening.
Yeah.
Well, we are looking at, now that Detroit's getting back on their feet and the water system is getting back on their feet, before things kind of got kind of bad and they had financial difficulties, we had approached Detroit Water and Sewer Department about partnering on taking sewer sludge and creating power.
Oh, yeah. Burning it? Or
well, no, not
drying
burning it.
You got to dry it.
Well,
so
you actually you kind of cook it. What you do, you put it in a sealed system and you put some organisms in it and they consume the sludge, and their waste product is
methane.
Is a methane, and it can be cleaned and treated to produce natural gas. Mm-hmm. So we had some conversations with Severstal and since AK Steel about they're interested in if we can produce natural gas economically, they would buy everything we produce because they're the largest consumer of natural gas in Michigan.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Oh, wow.
For their steel furnace.
Of course, they've got to get pretty hot there in those furnaces.
Yeah.
Now.
So we're going to go back to that and revisit that because I know that Detroit Water and Sewer, they have some excess sludge they'd like to do something with other than burning it or putting it on land.
That's kind of a, well, it's probably completely different technology, but I remember some early cultures, whether it was India or maybe it's still happening today, where they actually use feces from animals as bricks to burn in a fireplace. Mm-hmm. There's got to be something flammable in there, whether it's the methane or the gas coming out of it, but I think they bake them first and then they take them around to whoever needs that.
Yeah, there's enough cellulose material still left into
that at least. That sure. Fiber stuff.
Yes, that still can.
So like sort of like
create heat. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's not quite the same. I knew that.
Yeah, we don't want to burn anything.
No, it might be
point,
pretty
yeah.
smelly too.
Yeah.
Got to be careful. And methane, you don't want to release to the atmosphere because that's really almost
terrible.
As bad or worse than carbon dioxide.
It's worse. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Talk about global warming. It would. If you just randomly allowed more, mm-hmm. and they're worried about. I understand they're worried about that in terms of icebergs and glaciers melting. Then the land underneath or whatever would mm-hmm. produce more methane into mm-hmm. the environment, so it'd be
correct.
Worse than carbon dioxide. So yep. Well, that's not here in Dearborn. We don't have any glaciers melting. Not for a while. Yeah. Okay. Well, we're with Dave Norwood, and we've got a great start on. I think sort of an overview of some things have been happening, but we want to talk to you today at least about some of the new projects. Let's go back to the one you first mentioned, and that is the Greenway development. You've got a rather large brochure you gave me there. Mm-hmm. I don't know where I put it, but you've got it there. Okay.
Yes.
And summarize that. Now, that's primarily for recreational trails.
Yeah. The start of all of the biking efforts in Dearborn have come about with the Rouge Gateway Trail, which was a partnership between the Henry Ford College was involved, UM Dearborn, the Henry Ford, the city, Ford Motor Company. To produce that trail. So now we've had some new staff come into our planning department and who are some younger fellas, and they're very interested in transportation, non-motorized transportation, in conjunction with some work that Beaumont Health is doing with the city mm-hmm. From a health
healthy
standpoint.
Living yeah. initiatives. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's a group working on walking and biking in the city of Dearborn. So mm-hmm. the intersection of these things going on created this great interest in creating more biking opportunities in the city of Dearborn. And so we're looking at a trail that circles around west downtown and that connects to some of the work that Ford's doing at the Wagner Place mm-hmm. at the corner of Monroe mm-hmm. and Michigan Avenue. This trail will connect at the train station, which connects to the Rouge Gateway Trail.
Okay.
And also at Ford Field, where the new path was created behind Adiamo's. You've probably seen the work that has been completed there.
Mm-hmm.
That will eventually create the trailhead at Ford Field. In addition, that that trail is going to connect to what we call the Central Loop, and we're looking at a trail on Michigan Avenue that goes up Mercury.
Okay, Mercury
Hubbard,
Drive, sure.
Mm-hmm. Hubbard, and then connects at the North Campus of U of M Dearborn, where the trail is under construction right now. And then that trail will take you back down through along the Ring Road of Fairlane to the Union, which is the housing for UM Dearborn, and then through UM Dearborn's campus back to the Rouge Gateway.
Was that going to connect our area also with Downriver or eventually?
There's another trail.
Another extension?
Another trail, sure.
Okay, oh, another trail. Okay.
And I have to give kudos and thank graciously the Kosh family of the Dearborn Sausage. Their ownership there. They donated to Beaumont Health, and that came to the city of Dearborn to build a trail along Otter Drive, biking trail that connects. It's going to start from Ford Road, go to Southfield, but ultimately that trail is going to connect at Hines Drive, which is the Rouge Gateway Trail, down Otter Drive to Jefferson, which connects to the Downriver Link Greenways Initiative. That's their trail.
Okay.
So.
Mm-hmm.
So we have some meetings with the Wayne County who are very supportive of this project. There's as you probably know, Jay, there's already people biking on Otter Drive. So we're just going to formalize that. There's certainly some challenges around Michigan Avenue and Military and Otter Drive and Gulfview, but we're going to, the county's working with us to deal with those. And I think,
what does it take to identify a bike path? Like just east of Dearborn, Michigan Avenue, all of a sudden is bike paths.
Yes.
I mean, it's not a great, beautiful, scenic ride there going directly east. Somebody got a grant for that. I mean, it's the city of Detroit, and they've got bike paths on both sides, clearly identified, and it looks really nice. I don't, doesn't go too far. It doesn't go all the way downtown, but I'd say at least 5 miles.
Yeah, it goes, it doesn't go all the way downtown, but it goes quite a ways. Detroit has, the last number I saw was 200 miles of bike paths, and they're projected to have 300 when they're done. They'll have the most bike paths in the country when they get done. That's a tribute to Detroit and how big Detroit is.
Well, it's a great idea. I mean, I just, if we can do, if they can do Michigan Avenue bike paths east of us, why can't Michigan Avenue through Dearborn have bike paths on both sides?
We're exploring the
expressway connections is one big problem, right? I mean, because of the entrance ramps and the exit ramps.
Correct.
That's
those
a real
are
challenge.
Issues of how to, you can walk it now, and I quite frankly, I ride my bike on that. You're not supposed to ride your bike on a sidewalk, but I do ride my bike through there when I go to work, because I live in the west side of Dearborn. The mayor's vision, and we've had already conversation with MDOT, they haven't told us no about using the railroad right away, because they own the railroad right away as it runs through Dearborn, South Michigan Avenue, and taking some of the right away to put a bike path in, and then use the bridges across the Rouge and Southfield to hang a bridge, if you will, for biking and walking to connect east and west downtown. Because that's always been a challenge.
Yeah, I know. I've ridden there's only the sidewalk on the south side of Michigan Avenue, and it's always a challenge, of course, when you come to the Southfield entrance and exit ramps there. Do you stop? How far do you have to look back? In some cases, because of the way the bike path, you have to practically turn back really far over your shoulder and
to see what's going on.
And then, of course, what is it, 50 miles an hour? It's supposed to be 50 or 40, 45 along there. Cars zip by sometimes faster than that to get to that exit ramp. And so they come up quick. Even if you look back, you only looking back a quarter mile, and oh my gosh, they're here faster than you can believe. It's a little bit tricky there. So some sort of bike or pedestrian overpass, if that's possible, it's got to be expensive. But just in general, certainly, I know that you and there used to be a couple people else somewhere in city government. It was two women, and of course it was 3 years ago or so, but they were working on an idea for, I think, especially bike paths in the city too.
Yeah, there was two planners. Yeah.
Planners. Yeah. Okay. Because any way that we can make, I mean, I'm looked at the Greenway connections, and they don't, for example, there's nothing that really helps me in East Dearborn safely on a bike get to Fairlane Town Center or Henry Ford College. Oh, yeah, I get to U of M by going an extra couple miles out of my way and then zip back. By the way, that path that goes north from the college here, we almost lost the whole path because of erosion into the river, and They put a new little small sidewalk instead of the bike path. It's just a standard sidewalk to go around that area. And they dumped, I don't know how many tons of concrete boulders down there. And they've got it all, you can't even look at it. I don't know why they don't want people to look at it, but they've got tall 10-foot fence that's all blocked off, so you can't even look at all the rocks that are going down the hill now to prevent the erosion. Apparently all the runoff from the parking lots, which is part of the design, that there had to be official ways to do that. The design was a little flawed because they didn't consider how much water and how fast it would be coming down this one spot. And it wasn't natural erosion. It was just blasting away all the soil from about, it looks like about 40 or 50 feet above the river, the standard level. And it was so bad, the whole hillside, including half of the bike path, collapsed. That's the power of water, folks.
It always wins.
So I'm not sure. They're probably just going to leave it there because our perimeter drive is right next to it, so they couldn't make the sidewalk any bigger. So it's a little narrow there, folks. You just have to take turns with your bikes going back and forth. It's still used an awful lot for recreation. And
it's a very popular trail.
It's just if you're heading that way, then you're going to go back into the forest and down and up to, crossing Ford Road on whatever that other, the outer drive path that goes towards Plymouth there.
Yeah, it goes all the way to Northville. Yeah.
If it's not heavily raining or something at the time.
Right, yeah.
That's a floodplain, of course.
Yes. Yeah. Designed as a floodplain. Uh-huh. Right?
So who's paying for these trails?
There's a couple, like I said, we're getting private donations from the Kashas.
That's right.
$150,000 for the outer drive. That's pretty significant. The other Ford Motor Company is going to be part of the partnership on this. The Downtown Development Authority is putting some dollars towards the trails in the downtown. The Central Loop, we're looking at MDOT, their transportation alternative program, where you can get grant dollars to do that. The city has budgeted $800,000 general fund dollars for these trails. So I know you and I have talked about biking, and you're an avid bike and supporter.
Right. And I'm close enough in my situation to walk. It's only like a mile or two to. Really everything I need, from a grocery store to the to small restaurants to the post office in East Dearborn and so on. So that's good, but biking could extend my shopping a little bit further. I've tried to talk to the Kroger people to put up bike racks in their lot. This is the Kroger at Michigan Avenue in Greenfield. They redid their lot, which was terrible. At least they repaved the lot, but they haven't done anything with bike racks or even shelter for bikes and bike racks. You know, if the weather is really bad, you don't want to come out to see your bike totally drenched with water, although eventually it would be. And they have to be well-designed bike racks. They can't just be a post in the ground,
right.
Too.
And they have plenty of room underneath their awning there, right?
I would think they are. They're spending a lot of money right now over the CVS that's attached, redoing the roofs. But, I think when businesses like East and West Downtown Development Authorities, which are now one, I guess, right, sort of, or they're trying to work together.
Yeah, they're working through those issues. Yeah.
If businesses can keep that in mind for bicyclists, then more people would bike there if they had a way to secure their bike and if it was convenient, not at the far end of the parking lot or something, and I think that would be helpful too.
Yeah, there's an effort. It's not city related, but called BikeDearborn.com, which is some residents who are actively promoting and advocating for biking in town, led by different ranges. Their folks are Chris Timko. He lives in Hubbard West, and a resident who actually lives in California now, but commutes to Chicago and
by bike. No,
yeah, and a gentleman works at the hub down back alley hub bikes in Detroit, and the lady who leads the walk and roll is Tracy Besick. These folks are pushing and advocating for biking in Dearborn.
I'm sure you would suggest that almost anyone that can think of an initiative or has a group, whether it's got a website, of course they almost always need a website, like BikeDearborn.com, should at least get in touch with your office. You
Absolutely.
Are that coordinator. You want to know what's going on and keep the ideas flowing. And,
yes.
Yeah.
I can bring the city's energy behind things.
Again,
and
Dave Norwood, Norwood, at Dearborn's Administrative Center. I'm interested, the Healthy Dearborn Initiative from Beaumont Health System, they're special events on this brochure you gave me. Walk and roll is the name of the concept. It's biking, folks, walk and roll. Although I guess you could use roller skates. I don't know.
Yeah, we've seen roller.
Do they allow a skateboard? So that's a question. That's that can be dangerous. But on May 3rd, there's a kickoff. It's a it says bike or walk every Wednesday evening, family-friendly, leisurely paced. May 3rd is kickoff. Walk with Dearborn City Council President Susan DeBaggia. At Levagood Park.
Yeah, we're excited that the council president agreed to come with us. And
Levagood Park, that's just going around in a circle.
Well, the walking will go around the circle. The biking will go around the neighborhood. We bike anywhere from 5 to 8 miles. Not a super fast pace.
So it's like an hour?
Yeah, it's an hour.
Oh, it's every Wednesday evening at 7 p.m., so about an hour. Okay.
Yep.
So before it gets too dark, it's getting lighter all the time. May 31st is with District Court Judge Sam Salami. Yep. And the 28th, Fire Chief, and the 19th, DPS Superintendent Glenn Maliko. Oh, boy. Yeah. Well, that would be fun. You're not on the list. Are you probably there?
I'm there every time.
You
yeah.
have to
yeah,
be.
Yeah, I
the
enjoy
coordinator.
This.
He's got yeah. a coordinator.
It's fun to see all the
yeah. Sure.
Another kind of a interesting side note to this walk and roll is Tracy goes to all these different parks, and folks come from all part of town, and they don't realize we have 43 parks in Dearborn.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
they get to see another different part of the city, and they're always amazed at we're a big city, and mm-hmm. we have some interesting parks and some assets that people should take advantage of. And Tracy's really good about getting folks into different parts of
well,
town.
Well, certainly whenever the Greenway connections get in place, then you're going to have special events to get people
yes.
to try those mm-hmm. Connections too. I noticed a couple of them seem to say Ford Motor Company connections. Does that mean only
yes.
they can ride them?
Nope. Ford Motor Company has been a great partner on this because they are very interested in connecting their research and engineering campus where they're doing significant improvements over $1 billion there. They want to connect that campus to the world headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
They're already talking about the world part of the world headquarters opening up for biking for the public through.
Yeah, I see a plan that goes north from Michigan Avenue, or comes south from Hubbard through there, at least on sort of the west side. But in fact, this is a aerial view of before the construction, I think, because mm-hmm. It just seems like every available space on their so-called central campus there is being torn up, and they're putting big buildings there. So
yeah, they're doing some.
Going to be very crowded.
Things.
So. There's all kinds of different pathways coming up, and that's very good. Again, in the same brochure, you do have some Outer Drive Greenway legend details. So that you're hoping for a bike lane that is an actual lanes.
Yep, a 5-foot lane.
5-foot lane on there's a couple different ways to do it. But
yep, generally by where you see the boulevard and Outer Drive, there's enough mm-hmm. width there to create a bike lane.
And then that requires, of course, education effort with.
We'll let the folks know.
A lot of signage, first
There'll
of all.
There'll be signage, yes.
Bright colors on the pavement to indicate
green.
Where they shouldn't put their cars. And there's something, and it does look different to me, called a bicycle box, too, where it looks like the bikes are on a bike lane, but when they come to an intersection, they can try to cut across area.
There's where you can cut across. There's also just mm-hmm. It's a resting area for bicyclists to let the drivers, the motorists know there's going to be bikes there.
Mm-hmm. And that the bike lane itself, the 5-foot bike lane, is to the left. If you think of the, always staying on the right side of the road, it's to the left of the parking
Correct.
Spots.
Yes.
So it's not like there's either a car parking there or a bike lane. It's the bike lane is just to the left of that. Mm-hmm. And there's enough room, of course, on Outer Drive to re-identify the lanes then.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I can't believe there isn't enough room on Michigan Avenue. It's just, again, the speed of the cars and those two big exit and entrance ramps that mm-hmm. are the problem. Although I think it would be nice if Ford Motor Company would just pony up and put a bike path on the north side off the road of Michigan Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's their land. I mean, why would that be so bad? There's some entrance and exit problems mm-hmm. there too. But I just want to get to Henry Ford College without getting killed here. But everybody's got their own route that they want special attention for. So
yeah.
I'll stop talking about that. You mentioned in a couple of minutes, I've got some other stories I have to cover on the show today.
Okay.
No disrespect, but
I understand.
Know.
I'll come back. If you want me to come back?
Always. Yeah. Whenever there's an initiative, I need to be on your email list too. By the way, we'll do that later.
Okay.
June 13th, Bike Share is going to start in Dearborn. So talk
yes.
about that
yeah.
a little bit.
Yeah, Bike Share was something I've been working on in the city since June 2010. But funding was always an issue, and how we were going to make it, how to make that work. And through Healthy Dearborn, again, the Koshes, I can't thank them enough. They've been a great asset for this town. They have donated graciously to the city enough funds to pay for 6 years for a bike share system in the city of Dearborn. So we partner with Zaxter, which is something that's going on in Detroit. It's a system where you through your smartphone, you can join or pay through your smartphone, and it gives you a code, and you unlock the bike because the bikes will be smart.
Comes out
bikes.
Of a rack of some sort. It's a locked rack.
The rack is a dumb rack, as we call. All the technology is on the bike.
Okay.
So it'll give you a code to unlock the bike, and then you can use the bike for a certain period of time for free if you're a member, or we're looking at $3 to $4 an hour if you're not a member, and you use the bike as a transit system around town. Mm-hmm. So that's going to launch June 13th with 10 stations and 50 bikes. And you'll see him identify a cottage.
And where's a station going to be in Dearborn? Or
so
two?
We're going to have 10 locations.
Wow.
Yes, we're in the process of identifying those locations. But generally speaking, we're looking at...
Probably the train station would be a
train
good location.
Train station, correct. Yeah, right. Several spots through West Downtown. Mm-hmm. We're looking at U of M Dearborn's campus, potential Henry Ford's campus, the college here. We had to work on connections. We got to figure that out.
Yeah, I know.
Fairlane is actually wants to become bike friendly, so they're a partner in this. So you might see some stations.
That would be a first. Yeah.
Yeah. Fairlane's changed. Their leadership is looking at this very differently.
Well, they have to because they're just not as many people shopping there, and the traditional stores have pretty much all left, and so it's a whole different kind of shopping situation. Although still a great facility. Thank goodness that Ford Motor moved into one ring because I don't think they could make their costs without that lease. But nonetheless, I assume those bikes, since you mentioned they're smart bikes, if they get stolen, they probably dial the cops themselves, right?
You can identify. Yeah, they do have GPS on them. Yes.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah, that's why they're smart. Just so if somebody takes it, you can track it down. Uh-huh.
Correct.
Yeah. And hopefully, you can't pull the batteries out of the smart bike too easily. Yeah. Is that are they not electric bikes?
No, the three speeds. Yeah.
Oh darn.
They're not the prettiest bikes in the world.
Well,
on purpose. Yeah.
Right. I know. But those programs in a variety of cities, including I know Paris, France, is very very successful. Of course, Paris has terrible traffic problems, and somehow they found a way to allow people to ride bikes too in the midst of the terrible car traffic. Mm-hmm. But I would think sometime in the future they're going to have to close parts of Paris just to make it only bike share. I know
Correct.
I think you can't even get into the city of London now without driving a diesel, for example. Right. And there's some other restrictions like that too. Mm-hmm. This is great that you're able to pull this together with a number of great donors and other organizations that contribute to this. Thank you to Ford Motor Company for not only coming up with the new ideas of buildings that they need, but also to make it part of a community service. That's always an excellent idea. Mm-hmm. And any other things that you're working on for the farther future?
Certainly the Rouge River, the paddling we're doing.
Oh,
that.
Yeah, the paddling. Yeah. We didn't mention the paddling. He's got a brochure on that too, folks.
Yeah, you can now rent a kayak or canoe on the Rouge at Ford Field, so through Hevener Canoe Rental. But the city made an arrangement with them. They're not exclusive, but
do they have a little building or a cabin or a person sitting by the river or something?
They don't have anything that you're used to by appointment. You can call.
Oh, by appointment.
They bring their boats from Newburgh Lake in
Is this the people that last homecoming brought some
Correct.
Boats
same,
in?
Yep, yeah. The same team. Yep.
They were promoting this, I think, even then, but I didn't pay attention.
Sorry. They've done it a couple of years now, yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to that. This should be fun. They'll probably be back at homecoming, I trust, too.
That's the plan,
to help have even more fun down there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, well, it's a tough job, especially with no budget, Dave, and I give you a lot of credit for persevering, but it's got to be fun. There's always, excited volunteers and community groups that are out there, but it is a challenge to get everybody coordinated and working together. But the goals are totally wonderful, and it's not a question of, I think tomorrow is also, besides being Earth Day, March for Science Day.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And... You know, science doesn't care if you believe in it or not.
Right.
It's still there, folks. And, you know, the whole idea, whether you believe in global warming or climate change or whatever, a lot of these initiatives, including sustainability in general, are just going to save us money, and it's more healthy for us. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter if you believe in climate change or not, or, ecology is not just tree hugging. It's hugging each other. It's hugging the whole environment to keep everything better or even make it better than what it is now. So let's keep at that. And I gave you the brochure on this. We want Dearborn to be up there in the beginning solar cities somehow. Although that would be a first for a city as small as us, but if we find out how Detroit does it, let, you know.
I will find that out.
Yeah, okay.
Interested.
Get back to us, always.
Yes.
Always something happening at the Sustainability Office here in Dearborn. Dave Norwood is in charge. Call him anytime, day or night. He's got voicemail.
So. Yes, I do.
Anything else?
I think that's it.
Okay. Well, thanks for being on the WHO Journal today. And, yes, we will get back to you. And we'll put some announcements on from the station here, and I'll give you my email to make sure that we on your list, because there's all these activities, and I have to say, haven't heard about these yet. I bet it would, you know, some of these as they come closer will be in the Dearborn newsletter, of course.
Yes.
But
back fence.
Yeah. But it's good to be able to plan ahead and when to get your bike out of mothballs and get ready for other healthy things in Dearborn. So here's some comments from Jim Hightower, and we'll be back with a couple of more top stories here in Dearborn on the new WHFR Journal. So stay tuned and listen up.
Of all the people suffering economic pain today, who should get priority attention from the new president and Congress? Regular folks in our country say that those on the lower rungs of the economic ladder, the poor and downtrodden working class, ought to be the priority. But then, regular folks don't run Congress or Trump's White House. The Donald's working class voters must be stunned to see that his top economic priority is not them, but a tiny group dwelling in luxury at the very tippy top of the ladder, Wall Street bankers. Rather than pushing an urgently needed FDR-style jobs program, Trump and company are rushing to aid the richest Americans at the expense of the working class, actually proposing to unleash the banksters to defraud and gouge workaday people. For example, they want to save the poor financial giants from a consumer protection called the fiduciary rule. If you've got a 401k retirement plan, chances are it's managed by a firm of financial advisors. So this rule simply requires them to act in your best interest rather than shifting your money into risky investments that pay them bigger commissions. Prior to the enactment of this ethics provision in 2015, many advisors were serving themselves, gleefully ripping off their customers, mostly ordinary working families, to the tune of $17 billion a year. This is Jim Hightower saying, that's immoral, but it's real money. So the industry has been lobbying hard, but unsuccessfully, to kill the legal requirement that money advisors deal honestly with clients. Now, however, they've got a president who appreciates dishonest business dealings and is going all out to liberate them from the shackles of ethics. Hallelujah, shout Wall Street's bankers. Free at last, free at last. Thank Donald Almighty, we are free at last to gouge consumers.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
And we're back with more of the new WHFR Journal for Friday, April 21st. And tomorrow is the 22nd, Earth Day. Hope you got a lot of interesting information if you live in Dearborn and the surrounding areas about initiatives for sustainability, greater sustainability. I'm not sure we're very sustainable right now, but we've got to get there someday soon, in fact. A couple other big stories coming up besides Earth Day. By the way, the nearest, if you're looking for a festival, something with a lot of information and vendors talking about sustainability initiatives for maybe you individually in your home, one idea is, if it's not too chilly, starting later today and on through Sunday, the city of Rochester, Michigan is having, and they've done this at least for 10 years or more, a green festival. And you can get more information, just go to City of Rochester, Michigan website, and you'll see a link to the Green Festival up there that's happening. And that's supposed to have at least 50 different vendors of a variety of different products and services, and probably some local organizations, nonprofits, like maybe Sierra Club Michigan will be there, and other nonprofits where you can get information and ideas about things upcoming. In fact, other information on that real quick. I don't know if that can be quick. I probably can't be. I'm looking at this information right now. Sierra Club of Michigan says Earth Day 2017, which is tomorrow again, resist, build, and rise. Remember the old ecology slogan, reduce, reuse, recycle? Reduce, reuse, recycle. And that's a key element of becoming sustainable. But now, because it's kind of a political thing with the Environmental Protection Agency budget being slashed as proposed by the Trump administration, and having a non-environmentalist in charge of it, in other words, somebody that doesn't believe we need to clean up or preserve our environment, it's only there for us to exploit, for big business to exploit, is apparently, I think his last name is Pruitt, and that's his stated opinion. So that's why they've changed the slogan a little bit, to resist, build, and rise. And so there is a number, there's a People's Climate March in Washington, D.C. on April 29th. And the Sierra Club is running buses from this area. And they're, you know, just go to sierraclub.org and click on Michigan chapter, and you can get more information about everything that they're doing. By the way, all opinions expressed on this show so far today and for the next 10 minutes are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College, faculty, staff, or students, except for yours truly, of course. And no one told me to say these things. Just, you know, so you know who to blame. Just me. And Dave Norwood and Sierra Club and Jim Hightower and so on. But hope those are challenging ideas for you. If you disagree at all, then good. Wonderful. Do your research, double check your information, and continue to advocate for what you have discovered. Basis, in fact, of course, is always best, is the way to go. Sierra Club Michigan also, I don't see a story about it directly in front of me, but Sierra Club also is got a way to allow you to investigate. If you contact them, they will put you in touch with people who can do an analysis of your private home or business, perhaps, and in terms of getting alternative energy established, like solar power and so on. What are the costs? What are the possibilities? What would be the desired situation for you? And if you investigate, you know, there might be great possibilities to save money in the long run. Sierra Club is also fighting the what's called the Line 5. It's the pipeline that has something like 23 million gallons of oil pumping through the heart of the Great Lakes every single day, and the pipeline is 64 years old. There is an opinion piece that's in Press and Guide on their website, and also the NewsHerald.com website, from someone who is supposedly a radio talk show host on WAM, that's W-A-A-M radio, and he makes like the total rejection of any risk at all about Line 5, 64 years old, with broken supports for the line being a problem. And who cares if it's a couple dozen more jobs and $10 million more in money each year? Well, let me tell you, the cost of having contaminated lake water, that is for the Great Lakes in general, would be so much worse than that. I guess that radio DJ on Wham thinks the Flint problem was all fine and good because government did what it needed to do to make money, and why care about risk to the people? I just can't believe that sort of any very persuasive argument. You should read it and then reject it and see how he has gives no credence whatsoever to any of the facts about the potential damage here. I mean, even if it wasn't 64 years old, you wouldn't want to put this 23 million gallons of oil, and apparently they also somehow get natural gas piped through it too. Imagine if that blows up and contaminates the area. And there's other ways of getting this energy. Okay, there is wind, there is solar, And it's just unbelievable, the narrow-sightedness and the greed, the every-second greed of some of these people, such as that gentleman who is expressing his side of the coin, that is the Enridge side. I bet he's getting a special little contribution for his radio show from Enridge. He did such a great job for them, and really he did. But, you know, he leaves out all these things that page after page of the spring-summer edition of the Mackinaw, which is the newsletter for the Sierra Club Michigan, and they have scientists working for them. Oh, my God. You know, they've been researching this for years, too. And now at least some people in Michigan in legislature are considering. In fact, there's 6 Line 5 options put out for public comment. It'll be up to all of us to make sure that Governor Snyder understands that the choice he makes is the right one for the Great Lakes. And so the future of Line 5 is an issue, and it does affect us because we need clean water in the Great Lakes, even though we're down here, you know, next to Lake Erie, which apparently, according to Dave Norwood and his comments, you don't really want to swim in the Detroit River or Lake Erie very much. There's, you know, and it's not really drinkable water, a little bit of, you know, drinking. Well, that's terrible. Why shouldn't it be? Why can't it be? Who's contaminating it? Tell them to stop. Just stop. Can't just keep poisoning the public for personal profit. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, so Earth Day always gets me upset. Let's see here. What else am I upset about today? Tax Day. Yes, that was, of course, earlier this week. I'm sure you all want to forget about that. But here's 5 minutes. Okay, we'll conclude with this. Someone who also got upset, and I'm always upset about the tax structure and the whole tax system. You know, I am in favor of a progressive graduated tax. I think that's a fair way to go, and if you're going to do income tax, but maybe we don't even have to do that. Anyway, here's Craig Foran from the NewsHerald.com website. It is the News Herald, without a hyphen there between News and Herald, the NewsHerald.com website, and here's his opinion. He always begins with a quote. This one is from Will Rogers, American humorist. The only difference between death and taxes is that death doesn't get worse every time Congress meets. So there you go. He says, hello, Downriver. Happy birthday to us. It was 50 years ago this year that our state enacted the Michigan income tax that we all love to pay. And with the deadline to file our taxes just passed, it's a perfect time to talk about tax reform. Or as we've come to know it, cover your wallets and purses time. Especially since that phrase is being used in both Washington and Lansing, which means it will probably end up costing you more down the road. First, though, a little lesson on terminology. Graduated, or progressive, versus flat, or regressive, tax rates. Progressive tax rates are those in which there are step increases in the rate for progressively higher income levels. Our current federal tax system has 7 tax brackets, ranging from 10% for those making up to $9,200 a year to 39.6% for those making more than $415,000 a year for those filing as a single person. If you're married and file jointly or file separately or file as head of household, the dollar thresholds change, but not the rates. In 2000, we only had 5 brackets, and President Trump is proposing reducing the current 7 to only 3, 12, 25, and 33%. Craig Foran suggests this is nuts. In any case, he says this is a graduated tax. Now we can argue about the rates and that the wealthy don't pay enough. But a graduated tax is designed to be a bit more fair, which is why it's called progressive. Okay, it's moving us ahead. In Michigan, however, we pay a flat tax, income tax, which is therefore called regressive in nature. And it hurts the poor more than it hurts the rich, because it's the same percentage. When it was, and there's less excess funds, let's say, for people that are poor than people who are rich, although many rich people seem to be able to spend their money pretty easily and pretty completely. But I understand that one definition of a rich person is a person who doesn't spend their money. That's right, they just keep it. They earn it and they keep it for themselves. How else could somebody become a billionaire? If they spent it as it was coming in, they wouldn't have it. So they wouldn't be rich anymore. So actually a lot of rich people are very careful with their money, and that's fine. That's right. You know, they certainly don't want to waste money for no reason. Anyway, Craig Foran goes on here in his opinion. Now, for many people, a flat tax like ours in Michigan, which everyone pays the same rate, sounds nice and simple, but its effects are regressive. Our poor, low, and middle-income residents pay a higher percentage of their household income in taxes than someone who's wealthy. It's like buying a loaf of bread. If you're broke, it's hard to do, but if you're rich, it's pocket change. A graduated tax addresses that inequity. Everyone feels the same respective level of pain in their pocketbook. Of course, there are always sweeteners in all these tax structures. In Michigan, we provide exemptions for yourself, claim dependents, seniors, the blind, deaf or disabled, disabled veterans, unemployment, and children under 18. And you can also deduct some or all of your private pensions. It depends on your level of income in general. Ironically, these exemptions could easily be labeled tax breaks, on par with those who use various exemptions and deductions to avoid paying federal income taxes. Which brings us to today's discussion. Anytime someone talks about tax reform, as is in the case in Washington, you can bet they're not talking about helping you, unless, of course, you're part of that 1% living somewhere downriver. You should read the rest of his opinion. As I said, it's going to be in the Downriver News Herald newspaper. It's on the newsherald.com website right now. And we can always hope that there'll be changes for the better, which you can call progressive or whatever you want to. Now we have to say goodbye for the day because the new WHFR Journal has to close its book pages and make room for Highway 61 with Kitty Love. We'll have the best in the blues for 2 hours with Kitty Love coming up in just a moment here. So hope all of you have a happy and healthy Earth Day weekend now that we've survived the tax dilemma for another year. But as they say in the Sierra Club newspaper, the new slogan, keep this in mind, is, of course, which I can't find now, so I've already forgotten. Oh, well. It's something like resist and rise. You know, you've got to stay active. You have to stay in touch with people, talk about the issues, and coordinate your efforts. That way we can all be better, and we don't need to depend on government quite so much to take the initiative, which I don't think is going to happen too much in the future. Here we go. Bye for now. Take care out there. Here's Highway 61 on WHFR Dearborn.
The longest highway that I